Blog Talk Radio.
Governor, born in 1769, and I don't know if Bill Clinton of Arkansas is related to him, but certainly the Clinton clan name. We forgot to put up his picture, but the great Texas statesman, Sam Houston, who fought and defeated Santa Anna, along with Stephen Austin and several many other Americans who fought against Santa Anna and in the Texas-Mexican War, prior to the U.S.-Mexican War. The city of Houston, Texas, is named after Sam Houston. Great Bohemian composer, Bedrich Smetana, best known for the Moldau, and he was a composer at a time when Czechoslovakia was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. A great immigrant who came to Chicago, Carl Schurz, who fought in the American Civil War. In fact, there's a high school, famous high school in Chicago named after Carl Schurz. In 1876, one of the most controversial popes of the Roman Catholic Church, Eugenio Pacelli, was born. He was an aristocratic family, and he became pope on the same day, March 2nd, 1939, just before after the Spanish Civil War, and a few months before the Hitler's attack on Poland. Also in that same period, Kurt Weill, a great musician and composer, Jewish background, who wrote two symphonies, and he also wrote Rise and the Fall of the City of Mahogany, and the song that came out of there was Mack the Knife. He married Lotta Elena. Dr. Seuss was born on this day. Theodore Geisel wrote books for children. And the great black is known for Wagnerian singing and opera. Simon Estes, an American. Among the deaths today, the first Nicholas I, I think he didn't want to become Tsar. And then his son was Alexander the first, Tsar Alexander, who was assassinated. Also, we had... Howard Carter, every time you use a padlock, think of Howard Carter. He was the inventor of that. And then, of course, D.H. Lawrence, whose infamous book was banned in the United States, Lady Chatterley's Lover. Later became a famous film. Also, he wrote Justine, and the opening line was, the Egyptian city was the great wine press of love, something like that. Also, the Cleo Noel, who was a U.S. ambassador in Sudan, she was assassinated in 1973. So there seems to be open season on ambassadors. More are murdered or assassinated these days. Also, in 1776, the American colonists fired on Boston, where the British were occupying during the American Revolution. In 1807, it's appropriate for Black History Month, Congress banned the slave trade, and we sent out our fledgling United States Navy off the coast of Africa to intercept slave ships. In 1890, getting back to Arkansas, the territory of Arkansas was organized. In 1819, we had the first immigration law, contrary to that idiot governor down there in South Carolina who owes every ethnic whose ancestors were discriminated against when they tried to immigrate legally to this country. Nikki Haley hasn't apologized yet. She should. That would be a class act if she did. In 1824, the first interstate commerce law was passed by Congress. In 1829, we had the In 1836, Sam Houston, who was responsible for the Republic of Texas. Remember, Texas was a republic before it became a state. And then the American U.S.-Mexican War brought Texas into the Union. And then we have there's more. And then in 1853, we had the territory of Washington, which was separated from the territory of Oregon. And then, of course, there was the infamous, well, not infamous, controversial Ashburton Act, where the Canadian, the British government claimed part of Oregon. And of course, we said no. And so they decided to draw the, I think it was 54-40 or fight was the latitude final settlement. And then in 1855, we had Alexander, who became the czar successor to Nicholas I. He was the great-grandfather of Nicholas II, the last of the Romanovs. In 1858, this is another part of history not talked about, Frederick Cook invented the metal tie that used to hold together bales of cotton, and of course, everybody knows or should know that Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, which made slaves replaceable. And it's one of the reasons that led to the slave trade being was a losing economic proposition for Southerners. And it wasn't the issue the American Civil War was fought over, it was over states' rights. In 1861, the Dakota and Nevada territories were separated out of Nebraska and Utah. This is the formation of the western part of the United States. After the American Civil War, the Freedmen's Bureau was set up to educate blacks, although some, the way they vote, still haven't been educated. In 1867, there was peonage in New Mexico, and that was abolished by Congress. You know, these guys were peasants and bound by the jefes that ran the farms and plantations in New Mexico. And then in 1867, the U.S. Congress set up the Department of Education. It goes back that far. And also in 1867 was the Reconstruction Act. 1868, the great University of Illinois University opened. And in 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes, a Civil War veteran, he became president. And then Tilden, there was a popular vote. Tilden had more popular votes, but he didn't have he was one vote short of the Electoral College. The election was thrown into the U.S. House of Representatives. The Republicans under Hayes, who were pushing Hayes for president, made a deal with the Southerners in Congress that they would vote for Hayes for president, and Hayes would withdraw the Union troops from the South. The Union troops were down there enforcing civil rights of the newly enfranchised blacks. And then in 1893, the first Railroad Safety Act was passed. In 1899, getting back to the state of Washington, Mount Rainier Park was set up. In 1915, one of my favorite areas of history, Gallipoli, or the Dardanelles, was shelled by the British fleet under Admiral Carden. Unfortunately, and even Colonel Hodges, who was a lieutenant there in the guards, claimed that the British didn't use a very forceful admiral. They could have forced the a passage through the Dardanelles, but also the Turks had were under the command of Leman von Sanders, a German general staff officer, and also Ataturk, and they defeated, forced the withdrawal of the British, French, and the New Zealand troops. It was a disaster. And, of course, we have the only interview that Hodges did, later became a U.S. citizen. Also on this day, in 1919, the Communists had their first international congress in Moscow after the defeat of the Whites under Admiral Kolchak. And a movie has just come out recently on Admiral Kolchak. Fascinating guy. In 1919, Congress set up the Customs and Patent Appeals Court. 1937, this is, if you travel to Mexico, you'll notice Pemex. The Mexican government decided they had enough of American oil buccaneers like Buckley's father, and so they nationalized their oil resources, and it's still that way today. And then in 1938, this was Stalin's big mistake. He had a show trial. He was a paranoid, a psychotic. And what he did was he put most of the Russian military upper echelon, well, actually went down into the non-com ranks, put them on trial. And it was about 5,000 officers who were executed, mostly were executed. So when the Germans attacked in 1940 in Operation Barbarossa, the Red Army did not have trained, seasoned officers to manage the Red Army. They had a bigger army, and they might have stopped Hitler. And it was Stalin's big mistake. And then let's see what else we have on this day. We have the... two vice presidents, well, also, the word is seeping out, according to The Hill and some other political cognoscenti, Trump is considering U.S. Representative Marshall Blackburn, who is a U.S. representative from Tennessee. She's born in January 22nd, so there's a connection. Also, she's, I understand, quite competent and, of course, a good-looking woman. We've had two presidents from Vermont, Chester Arthur, who was born in 1830 and has claimed that he was actually born in Quebec, Canada, could never prove it, and Calvin Coolidge, who was born on July 4th. Both of these presidencies involve a restriction of immigration. Arthur's presidency excluded Chinese, and that Chinese Exclusion Act was repealed in 1943 during World War II when Roosevelt needed the help of Chiang Kai-shek to defeat the Japanese. And then in Coolidge's administration in 1924, was racist in this respect. They limited immigration to 150,000 a year. Northern Europeans were favored over Southern Europeans, those are Italians and the Greeks and other dark Southern Europeans, and Jews. And Japanese were excluded altogether. And the Japanese were very peeved off, to say the least. Now, of course, these statements, these historical facts, they're irrefutable, contradicts that ignorant statement from that South Carolina governor, Nikki Haley, who a lot of people think that she owes an apology, a public apology to every ethnic group whose ancestors were excluded or abused when they came into the country, the Irish, the Germans, the Puerto Ricans, the Italians, Jews, and, you know, her parents came from India. Had her parents immigrated to England, they would have been treated with discrimination, and there were Indians, Brits who don't like Indians, refer to them as wogs. So she's very lucky to be born on this side of the pond. Now, there is a presidential campaign song called during 1924, and it's called Keep Cool with Coolidge. And we're going to play, it's from our historical archives, the Carson, Berzola Carson Archives. And here is an excerpt from that song. Yeah, it's a little slow here. I don't know what happened here.
Thank you.
for that Al Jolson, this is really interesting. Al Jolson made that song popular. It's interesting because Al Jolson was actually, I think, of Russian Jewish heritage. Now, Coolidge came out of Vermont. He did study, became a lawyer, and he became lieutenant governor of Massachusetts, which is next door. And, of course, later became governor, and then they had the infamous or controversial Boston police strike, and that catapulted him into the national eye. And here is Coolidge's public statement on police striking.
It is preeminently the province of government to protect the weak. The average citizen does not lead the life of independence that was his in former days under a less complex order of society. When a family tilled the soil and produced its own support, it was independent. It may be infinitely better off now, but it is evident it needs a protection which before was not required. Let Massachusetts continue to regard with the gravest solicitude the well-being of her people. By prescribed law, by authorized publicity, by informed public opinion, let her continue to strive to provide that all conditions under which her citizens live are worthy of the highest state of man. Healthful housing, wholesome food, sanitary working conditions, reasonable hours, a fair wage for a fair day's work, opportunity full and free, justice, speedy and impartial and at a cost within the reach of all, are among the objects not only to be sought, but made absolutely certain and secure. Government is not, must not be, a cold, impersonal machine, but a human and more human agency, appealing to the reason, satisfying the heart, full of mercy, assisting the good, resisting the wrong, delivering the weak from any impositions of the powerful. This is not paternalism. It is not a servitude imposed from without, but the freedom of a righteous self-direction from within. Industry must be humanized, not destroyed. It must be the instrument not of selfishness, but of service. Change not the law, but the attitude of the mind. Let our citizens look not to the false prophet, but to the pilgrim. Let them fix their eyes on Plymouth Rock as well as Beacon Hill. The supreme choice must be not the things that are seen, but the things that are unseen. Our government belongs to the people. Our property belongs to the people. It is distributed. They own it. The taxes are paid by the people. They bear the burden. The benefits of government must accrue to the people, not to one class, but to all classes, to all the people. The functions, the power, the sovereignty of the government must be kept where they have been placed by the Constitution and laws of the people, not private will, but that public will, which speaks with a divine sanction, must prevail. There are strident voices urging resistance to law in the name of freedom. They are not seeking freedom for themselves. They have it. They are seeking to enslave others. Their works are evil. They know it. They must be resisted. The evil they represent must be overcome by the good others represent. Their ideas, which are wrong, for the most part imported, must be supplanted by ideas which are right. This can be done. The meaning of America is a power which cannot be overcome. Massachusetts must lead in seeking it. Prosecution of the criminal and education of the ignorant are the remedies. It is fundamental that freedom is not to be secured by disobedience to law. Even the freedom of the slave depended on the supremacy of the Constitution. There is no mystery about this. They who sin are the servants of sin. They who break the laws are the slaves of their own crime. It is not for the advantage of others that the citizen is abjured to obey the laws, but for his own advantage. That what he claims a right to do to others, that must he admit others have a right to do to him. His obedience is his own protection. He is not submitting himself to the dictates of others, but responding to the requirements of his own nature. Laws are not manufactured. They are not imposed. They are rules of action existing from everlasting to everlasting. He who resists them resists himself. He commits suicide. The nature of man requires sovereignty. Government must govern. To obey is life. To disobey is death. Organized government is the expression of the life of the Commonwealth. Into your hands is entrusted the grave responsibility of its protection and perpetuation.
Now, that was a speech that made Calvin Coolidge a national, it brought him national fame. And, of course, then when the Republicans had their convention, that selected Warren Harding, who was a U.S. senator from Ohio and also a publisher, they decided to select Coolidge, who succeeded Harding when Harding had a heart attack here in San Francisco. And, of course, Frank Jordan, who was police chief from 1996 to 1990, if I'm not mistaken, but he was a long time serving police chief here in San Francisco. He ran for mayor against Art Agnos, who was seen as corrupt, a community organizer, that kind of, handle, if you want to call it that. And during one of his campaign speeches, Frank Jordan accused Agnos of an administration where anything goes. And that has become, with so much corruption in San Francisco's government and City Hall, that has become the new theme song. And, of course, excuse me, we I thought we had it here. So we're going to end with our usual politics and poker, and we'll get into the corruption at City Hall later, because we just had a police department, I think it's the first in the United States history, a police department rousting homeless people from a major street. Now, we did have during Hoover's administration, Hoover was a successor to Calvin Coolidge, where General MacArthur, the veterans went to Washington. There was a march on Washington to demand the bonuses that were promised them. And, of course, they set up Hoover bills. And Hoover didn't like this, and he ordered General MacArthur, who was chief of staff of the United States Army, he ordered General MacArthur to tear down or bulldoze the Hoover bills and to roust the veterans from Washington. And that didn't look too good for Hoover when he ran against ran for reelection. And FDR, I think, was his opponent. And, of course, FDR promised Happy Days Are Here Again, which was another theme song. And it's going to be a question whether Trump, who seems to have it very close to wrapping up the Republican nomination, unless he's torpedoed or sabotaged, maybe it's time for him to consider spending some money for a campaign song. And, of course, there was one, This Is My Country, which I think would be appropriate for his for a lot of Americans who are really peed off about what's been going on and what is going on and what will continue to go on if Hillary or any of that ilk becomes the next president. So we will end with our usual politics and poker. And excuse me. So, and I will be back Wednesday, excuse me. No, today's Wednesday, Friday, and hopefully I've been trying to get a hold of Pat Butler so we can find out what the hell is going on in America's, where the best politics in the country are, and that's in Chicago in Cook County, where there's real politique, as I call it. So we will get our usual ending song, politics and poker, and what's going on here. And also go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We will have the Anything Goes and why San Francisco is the most corrupt American city and where the theme is, Anything Goes. And, in fact, one of the major politicians, a carpetbagger from New Jersey, Buck Bagot, made that statement that anything, in effect, I can do anything to promote affordable housing and nothing about accountability.
Too much on my mind to play poker.
Okay.
Which is more important?
Paratrade.
Venom.
Little trade, good as gold.
It's Peter Paul Brazola. We'll be back Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And, of course, we're going to have to get some rain. And, of course, we're not going to let it rain on our parade. Stay safe. And remember, pay attention to what people are not only saying, but what they're doing and what they have done. Good night.